You're listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast, presented by K Jewelers. Every podcast begins with K. Well, P, actually, but you know.
You're listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast, presented by K Jewelers. Tim McMaster here, along with Anthony Castrovince. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Anthony, and everyone out there listening. And let's get right into things, Anthony. Some of the big news over the last few days, obviously the Dodgers have finally named their next manager. They certainly took their time. In the end, it's Dave Roberts nudging out Gabe Kapler for the position. And it seems like really what this comes down to is Roberts really killed it in the interview process.
Yeah. And, you know, interesting there, because obviously the Padres have had two managerial changes in the last calendar year. And Roberts passed by in both instances, but obviously he wowed the Dodgers. He also wowed the Mariners. He was their runner-up to Scott Service. So this guy certainly interviews well and well-respected in the game. And, I think he'll be a nice fit for that Dodgers team. That you think about the way they're putting things together there under Andrew Friedman. And, you know, they're starting to have their guys now. And no offense to Don Mattingly, but I think everybody knew when Friedman arrived that, you know, you always wonder about a manager when a new GM or team president type arrives and what the future holds. So now everybody's on the same page. And interesting in that it basically came down to Dave Roberts and Gabe Kapler. And I think that the Dodgers made the right choice, just because it's not just the managerial the big league coaching experience, but also I think Kapler might have more value to them in the role he's in, frankly. He's having an impact on the entire minor league system. So I think it's kind of a win-win for the Dodgers in that sense.
Now, obviously, Dave Roberts, it'll be his first manager job. So what kind of a manager do you expect him to be?
Well, this is a guy who's obviously well-respected from his playing career on, as far as, you know, a leader type and a communicator and a person who can empower other people. And what you hear about Dave Roberts more than anything is that, you know, everybody he comes into contact with or interacts with, he has an effect on, and he has a way of communicating with them that, makes them feel empowered, it makes them feel special. So I think that's important. I think there is just a need, a glaring need for general clubhouse cohesion in LA. We've seen that the last few years, and, you know, they are starting to go a little younger in many cases. They've made it a point to protect their prospects, whatever. This is going to be a guy who comes in and commands respect, you know, from everybody who steps in that clubhouse. So I'll be curious to see, you know, what the next dominoes are with this Dodgers offseason. We all are. They're a fascinating team. Obviously a team that's spent big in the past, but I think they're really making a concerted, conscious effort to make the right choices every step of the way here, and not just the easy, obvious, expensive choices. So we'll see what the future holds. You know, obviously Yasiel Puig is a big source of curiosity at the moment in this trade market. But moving forward, I think they've got a very good leader now in their dugout, and I think you hope it leads to more clubhouse cohesion in general.
When you talk about what's next for the Dodgers, I think the obvious thing that needs to get done at some point is to add some starting pitching. Is that something you mentioned, Puig? Is that a thing that could happen where you shop Puig and maybe bring in pitching that way, or do you think that they eventually end up getting that pitching via free agency?
Yeah, they can go really any number of ways. I mean, Puig is a trade candidate, of course. You know, I'm sure they'd like to move a Carl Crawford contract or Andre Ethier contract, but Puig's probably the more realistic, just because of his youth and his perceived upside. But there's also some baggage there that some teams will shy away from. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, the market is deep in both pitching and corner outfielders, so it's kind of they can go about it either way, really. Ultimately, you suspect that Puig, coming off an injury, injury-affected year, a year where, you know, a lot of people hoped he would break out into MVP-type status. Instead, he kind of broke down. He only played 70-some games. His trade value is not exactly at its peak. So I would say the more likely option is the Dodgers go out and buy some pitching.
When you look at this starting pitching market right now, it really hasn't started to come into focus at all. And I think back to a year ago, and it really took until the winter meetings when we saw Jeff Samardzija go to the White Sox and then John Lester went to the Cubs the next night. Do you expect a similar timeline this year where we're not going to see any of these big high-priced guys like Price, Greinke, Cueto, Zimmerman? Are they all going to kind of stay on the market until at least the winter meetings?
I would think we start to get some traction on the Price market at the winter meetings, at least. I mean, the guy lives in Nashville, so you'd think he'd be working the hotel a little bit and meeting with some clubs. But just in general, obviously there is a tremendous top tier here this year with Price and Greinke and Cueto and Jordan Zimmerman. You can include in that group as well. And it would not surprise me at all, just knowing that how many teams are really have the financial wherewithal to be in on those guys. It would not surprise me if the next year, not unlike what we saw a couple 2 years ago, where the second tier pitching market really started to move briskly even before the top tier. That would not surprise me at all this year. So you know, you think about the Yovani Gallardo types in this market, or Wei Yin Chen. You know, guys of that ilk could potentially be the first to move. But anytime the winter meetings come, we start to see more activity. It's just natural because agents and teams are meeting face to face. And again, in Price's case, you got the player right there in town, so you know we could see some traction there just from that standpoint.
When you have all the big name guys that we talked about, it's always interesting to me to see who the first domino it is, because you'd think that the guy who's going to get the biggest contract, who you would guess is David Price, would be first, but it's not necessarily the case. Do you have any guesses as to which of these guys maybe is antsy to get a deal done, get it out of the way, or are they all just going to wait and see where he sets the market and then kind of go from there?
Yeah, I don't know about antsiness. You know, that's on the part of the player. But like I mentioned, I mean, that second tier, you think about a guy like Chen, who's been, you know, very durable and is left-handed and has pitched well in a tough division. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see some quick movement on him. Now, he is a Scott Boras client, so there's that element. But again, I mean, if you just look at things realistically, the number of teams that can move on a Price or Greinke is minuscule, really, compared to the number of teams who can move on a Mike Leake, you know, or even Jeff Samardzija. You know, he's an interesting one. He's tied to the draft pick compensation, but some teams will certainly view him as a strong bounce-back candidate. So it'll be interesting. Certainly a lot of work to get done in that pitching market because we haven't seen much movement there, and we know it's really deep.
And the depth really goes on and on. There's a report today that Tim Lincecum aiming for a January showcase and to sign then. So here's a guy that teams are going to have to wait for, but kind of an intriguing guy. Had hip surgery in September. There's some hopes that that'll help him kind of regain maybe some of what he once was, the once two-time Cy Young Award winner. When you look at a market for a guy like Tim Lincecum, off the top of my head, I would think, oh, he'll end up back with the Giants. But it sounds like when a guy is going to have a showcase, that he's going to kind of test everything and see where he might end up.
Yeah, and there are a lot of potential fits there in that scenario. And you know, Timmy lives up in Seattle. I'm sure the Mariners could use some depth in the starting department even. But there's a number of teams who would be interested in the freak if he's anywhere back to his old ways, you know. And that all starts with health. We know that. You know, last year he worked with his dad quite a bit in the off season and hoped that would get him in a better place mechanically. But rough year for him, you know, injury wise, and only pitching 70 some innings. So, you know, he's a guy who will linger in this market quite a bit because, as you said, I mean, he'll showcase himself to teams in January. So it'll be slow moving on that standpoint, and it won't be a guy anybody's bringing in to be the front of the rotation type, but. You know, if he gets back to a point physically where he can give you innings, just innings, start there. It's been a couple years since we've seen him rub up against that 200 inning threshold. So if he can just get back to that point, you know, where his body can tolerate a full season, 30 some starts, you know, I think a lot of teams will be interested in him as a bounce back candidate.
Now, he's a guy that we saw in the postseason pitch successfully out of the bullpen. Is that something that a team could maybe have to convince him to? But is he a guy that could end up late in his career pitching less innings in a bullpen role? And do you see him as a National League-only type guy?
I don't know about National League-only. Again, if he's back to his old health and mechanics, that stuff plays everywhere. But yeah, to your point about the bullpen, that's something that's been a source of fascination. I mean, he's in general a source of fascination. He's just an interesting character in this game, and you root for guys like that. But, you know, I could certainly see the bullpen being a part of his future. As far as the immediate future goes, I'm sure he's going to expend all his energy and give starting every last shot he can, because that's where he feels he belongs.
Another name that may be thrown into the market as far as starting pitching goes is Japanese right-hander Kenta Maeda. I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right, Anthony, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. But reports that he has asked to be posted. Now, we've obviously seen some Japanese pitchers come over to the major leagues and be tremendous, and other guys have struggled. When you look at his numbers in Japan over the last few years, they're great. The ERAs are great. The records are great. He's thrown a lot of innings over there, and he's still just 27 years old. So what kind of a wild card could he be if he ends up being posted?
Well, you just hit on, you know, probably the most important element. He's 27 years old. He'll still be 27 on opening day. And we know that it's rare. Everybody's talking about Jason Hayward and Justin Upton in this free agent market from the position player standpoint, how rare it is to get a player basically with his prime years, either he's still in his prime years or his prime years still ahead of him. It's pretty rare, and it's definitely rare from a pitching standpoint as well. So that'll be intriguing for Maeda. Now, he has worked a ton of innings in Japan, I believe 1,500 innings or so. And, you know, we've seen guys come over here and break down. Masa Tanaka, Yu Darvish. There's sort of that instant success, but there's also a question mark about the expiration date, just because they're not used to our schedule over here. And so Maeda will face those same questions, you know, that same scrutiny, but certainly very successful, very durable, and still pretty young. So he's going to have interest. There's no question about that. I expect him to be posted probably around the end of the month. And, you know, it's always a nerve-wracking experience for teams, because you have the posting fee plus whatever the contract is. But, you know, if you strike it right on one of those guys, it's a goldmine.
Anthony, the Tigers continue to kind of make moves and alter that roster a little bit recently. They get Cameron Maben from the Braves for a couple of lefties and Ian Kroll and Gabe Spire. So Maben goes back to the team that drafted him back in the first round in 2005. And certainly, I think, could be a big upgrade in that outfield. But you have Tyler Collins, you have Anthony Gose, you have J.D. Martinez. Where does he fit into that mix? Do they plug him in? Is he the Tigers' starting center fielder on opening day?
Well, I see him kind of filling the Rajay Davis role, kind of platooning with Anthony Gose in center field. They could use him in left field conceivably. But it kind of remains to be seen what the rest of their winter holds as far as that goes, because they could still go after an impact bat left field. So we'll see. But for now, if opening day were tomorrow, I would suspect it would be him and Ghost kind of sharing time in center field. It's funny how he comes back to the place where it all began, and obviously his career has not gone as anticipated. You know, even signing that extension with the Padres, that did not go as anticipated. But had a nice, made some nice strides with Atlanta last year. He wasn't a throw-in player in the Kimball trade, but he was really kind of an afterthought. And his inclusion was totally related to his contract. And it was just about, you know, trying to even out the money there. And lo and behold, he had a nice season for the Braves. You know, it wasn't a all-star season or anything of that nature, but he had a solid year. He got on base at a decent clip. Again, he showed himself at least to be a solid platoon option out there, so I suspect that's the direction they'll go there.
You mentioned expectations for him, and I will forever have unreasonable expectations for Cameron Maben because of 1 week back in 2007. Anthony, I was covering the Reading Phillies in the Eastern League. Maben was in the Tigers organization with the Erie Seawolves briefly. Yeah. He played six games for the Seawolves, and I happened to be there pretty much for the whole stretch. He comes up, and actually when I knew we were going to talk about this, I went back and checked the numbers. Six games with the Erie Seawolves, all he played that year. He was 8 for 20, four homers, a double, eight RBIs, and six walks. He looked like the greatest center fielder. I mean, he looked like the next Ken Griffey Jr. And I got to see him for that 1 week, and I remember thinking to myself, this guy is going to Hall of Fame, absolute Hall of Fame player. And I think it goes into to what we often talk about small sample sizes. But he was amazing for six games, and then they moved him up from there. And obviously the expectations that he would be a very good major league player stuck with him, but never really reached that Hall of Fame level that I was expecting back in 2007.
Well, not yet. He's going to have a heck of a finishing touch to get that. But I remember the Griffey comps were pretty frequent back then. And I even think there's I believe he worked out with Griffey at the time he was drafted. But, has not turned out as planned. And you know, give the guy credit because he's been through. I mean, it's tough to come in with that kind of pressure. But I give the guy credit for kind of a, I won't call last year a bloom, but certainly after all he's been through to put together a nice season and kind of rebuild his value a little bit was really nice to see.
And Detroit, a nice place for him because he'll be in a situation where maybe he gets a chance to contend for a playoff berth after being in San Diego for some tough years and Atlanta last year. Well, Jerry Dipoto out in Seattle continues to kind of make his mark on that Mariners organization. They signed Chris Iannetta behind the plate, and catching's a spot that was really troublesome for the Mariners a year ago, at the plate at least. The OPS just 464. A comparison to that, the Giants' OPS in 2015, the Giants' pitchers, 463 compared to the Mariners' catchers. But you still have Mike Zunino, who's just 24 years old. I'm assuming this is going to be a situation where both these guys see a good amount of time. You're not going to necessarily have your starting catcher and your backup. Is it going to be more like 1A, 1B?
It could be, or, you know, another option, send Zunino down, give him more. I mean,
yeah.
The Mariners rushed these guys, Ackley, Zunino, and they came out. They were just not ready for the big leagues at all. And so I don't rule that out either as an option of giving Zunino everyday opportunities in the AAA level. You know, I remember a year ago I heard through the grapevine that the Mariners were actually really heavy in the Russell Martin market, which kind of took me by surprise. You figure, well, Zunino's kind of locked in there. But I think that said something about their confidence in him at that point. And obviously Martin ended up with the Blue Jays. But and then Zunino actually, I mean, just absolutely cratered this year. Iannetta comes in. He hit .188 or so last year, and he's actually an upgrade at the position for them, which
yeah.
is crazy to think about. DePoto's really been targeting the low batting average on balls in play guys and hoping their luck evens out. Iannetta, Leonis Martin, both of those guys had abnormally low BABIP. So I would not be surprised. Maybe a little bit of a bounce back for both those guys, or at least that's what they're banking on. But yeah, the catching situation, this is a reuniting for Jerry Dipoto and Chris Iannetta, who, of course, spent time together in Anaheim. And yeah, we'll see what the future holds for Zunino. Excuse me, boy.
I'm easy for you
point.
To say.
For Zunino, but again, it would not be surprised to me, at least, to see him get everyday opportunities in the minor.
Very interesting. Now, there's plenty of news coming out of Seattle in the last couple of days. Reports that they could trade Mark Trumbo. What do they do at first base if that would be the case? If Trumbo leaves, you know, what is the plan? And how does he not fit into what Dipoto wants to do in Seattle?
Well, the one thing you got to remember is Jerry traded him once. He can trade him again.
Right.
So, he traded him to Arizona a few years back. And, you know, anytime a new GM comes to a situation, these are not his guys. He doesn't have the loyalty that Jack Zarensic had. And even you look at, like, Taiwan Walker, for instance, and trade value he has. You wonder if Jerry explores that. We'll see. There's a lot of moving parts right now. And as far as first base is concerned, that would totally be a moving part, and depends what they would get back in a Trumbo trade. You know, Nelson Cruz is probably best served to be a DH at this point. And there's some argument for, you know, maybe moving to Trumbo just to free up those first base/DH opportunities. I'm not sure. But, You know, DePoto is trying to make this team more athletic, first and foremost. And, you know, Trumbo is not the most athletic guy in the world. And so we'll see. He could be a guy who's just not suited for that particular ballpark, you know, maybe go to a place where his power plays up a little more. But all I know is that, again, I come back to that. Jerry DePoto traded him once. He could trade him again. There's no special need to be loyal there. I think anytime a new GM comes in, there's plenty of opportunity for movement just because he's trying to reshape the roster. He's trying to This is a roster that drastically underperformed, underachieved last year. So he's trying to move the needle.
Another report out of Seattle is that Robinson Cano's unhappy. And this is one of those situations where the report in the paper says Cano has said he's unhappy and he wants to go back to New York. But then quickly, since Jerry DePoto was already speaking about the Chris Iannetta signing, he was able to come out and say it's not true. He talked to Cano's agent and the reports are absolutely not true, which always begs the question, is there enough smoke there that there's got to be some truth to it, or are they just trying to sell some newspapers here on baseball in November? So that can go either way. Any gut feelings from you about Robinson Cano's happiness in the Northwest? Obviously, he had the stomach issues, and I'm sure he wasn't thrilled with the way all that panned out, but now he's healthy after the surgery. Do you expect Robinson Cano to continue to be a Seattle Mariner for the rest of this long contract?
I absolutely do. Yeah. I don't know about the rest of the contract. Who knows what the latter year holds. But as of now, I mean, if he misses New York, he's making $24 million a year. He can visit New York anytime he wants in the offseason. But, you know, this happens. The guy chased every last dollar in free agency, as is his right, and you don't blame him at all for that. But he came into a situation where he's trying to be a part of building something more than an established winner. And it has not gone as planned so far in Seattle. They did make great strides in his first season in 2014, but he immediately felt the effects of you know, going to Safeco Field and the impact that can have on your power. And then this year was just a miserable season, you know, health wise and performance wise. But yeah, at the end of the day, he's got 8 years and over $200 million remaining on that contract. So that's not movable by any stretch of the imagination. At one point, I was even, this was early in the winter, I was looking at various things, saying, is there any scenario, because the Yankees needed help at second base, Mariners need help in center field. I was like, is there any scenario where it makes sense to send Jacoby Ellsbury back to the Pacific Northwest and Robinson Cano back to New York, trade a couple bad contracts? I think you would have to get really creative. You had to move, like, A-Rod back to Seattle as well to offset some of the money. It was kind of a fun thing to think about, but it was one of those you got about 2 or 3 minutes in and said, no, this doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, Robinson Cano is going to stay put because of that gargantuan contract, especially coming off a bad year. And they're just going to have to hope they can build something special around him.
The other New York team also needs a second baseman, but I think that discussion goes about 3 seconds before you nip that one. The Mets are in no position to bring in a contract like that, but another team in New York that needs a second baseman. All right, let's cover one more topic here, Anthony. Chris Davis, obviously one of the big sluggers available out there in free agency, and the Baltimore Orioles have consistently said that they want to keep him. And now a report, according to Buster Olney, that Peter Angelo's directly involved in the negotiations. Does this kind of make it more serious and make maybe people take it more seriously that the Orioles really do want to keep Davis? Because I know they've said that, and I know a fan base wants to hear that some of your star players want to be kept by the team. But when I look at the market and what he's going to get, I never really thought seriously that he could stay in Baltimore. But then you hear the owners involved. Is there a little more hope for Orioles fans that Chris Davis could remain at Camden Yards?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I've always taken it seriously just from the standpoint of, well, the two things. One, they really value Chris Davis in that clubhouse. You know, very much loved by that team. And as you can see with Angelos being involved, you know, that kind of speaks to that. So there's that. And then also, yeah, I mean, I understand the gut feeling as well. Chris Davis is, you know, a major, he's been one of the best power hitters in this game the last 3 or 4 years, and now he's hitting the open market, and you just kind of assume a guy like that goes out of Baltimore's price range. But at the same time, they've got a pretty wide open contract situation going on right now. I mean, they got a lot of bodies coming off the books, and there's good and bad that comes with that. They got a lot of flexibility financially this offseason. So it remains to be seen how they handle that, if they go in all in on a Davis or try to piece it together with a bunch of pieces. But, you know, and because they need help in a lot of areas, there's no doubt. That's the flip side of that coin. Yeah, you got this financial flexibility, but you don't have the resemblance of a contending roster at the moment. But they definitely, I think, they've got the ability to bring back Davis. And it's just a matter of, can they bring him back and still do the other things they need to do? You know, that's going to be the big looming question, especially in that pitching staff. So so we'll see. We'll see. But I obviously there's a relationship there, and that always helps. And, you know, the fact that ownership is involved at this level certainly speaks to how important it is to the Orioles. But, yeah, I'll be curious to see if they can afford Davis and still do what they want to do with that pitching staff.
All right, Anthony, it's been a lot of fun. This has been the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast with Tim McMaster and Anthony Castrovince. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.